From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly podcast on California politics. I'm John Myers from KQED, Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, here as always.
Yeah, although since I walked in here 10 minutes ago, it looks like we lost another $1 billion in the budget.
We lost another $1 billion?
Yeah, isn't that, seems like that.
What did we lose?
That seems to be the way it's working, right? Every 10 minutes or so, another round of cuts.
The drip, drop of it all. Huh?
Yes.
Well, obviously, it was a big week in budget news as we got a look at a whole bunch of really ugly cuts, and I guess that's kind of what we'll talk about the most. Let's do the most newsy part of it first, though. Let's do what we know as of Thursday afternoon that a lot you'll hear more about on Friday.
Mandatory puppy slaughter. Right? Or is that next?
I think that's the next round. That might be next. Yeah. Though the last time we dealt with things like that, the governor's daughter intervened.
The real authorities.
Yeah. So no, what we know as of Thursday afternoon is that the governor is going to, as part of his additional $3 billion in spending cuts, will propose a 5% pay cut for virtually all state employees. On top of the furloughs, which amounts to, the governor's folks say, about a 14% pay cut, which saves somewhere on the order of almost $900 million in the general fund and the special funds. And the special fund thing, of course, is important, as we were talking about before the podcast began, because that allows you to borrow from special funds for the cash crisis we're having. But that'll be part of the $3 billion.
And if you're losing track, the $3 billion is in addition to the $5.5 billion that the governor outlined, alluded to on Friday, but really outlined the governor's Department of Finance outlined earlier this week. Was it Monday?
Tuesday, because Memorial Day was Monday.
Oh, right. Wow. What a week.
Time flies. So, yeah, so we got to look at that $5.6 billion on Tuesday. And there were, as expected, a lot of severe, serious cuts, complete dismantling of CalWORKs, of Healthy Families.
And CalWORKs is the state welfare program.
Yeah, all state funding for parks and things like that. But the social services programs really drew the biggest outpouring of criticism. There were scores, tons
hordes.
Of people. What I'm trying to say, hordes, scores.
I guess tons could be factually accurate,
right? Gads of people.
Schools.
A lot of people here protesting and unhappy and testifying before the budget committee. So what do we make of all this, you think?
Well, you know, we were talking about this a little bit earlier. I mean, far be it from me to say that the budget crisis is not real somehow.
Come on, say it.
No. But I think given the governor's track record, I think watching this again, it's, you have to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, this is a guy who tends at the beginning of a negotiation to make it look as bad as possible, right? I mean, I think it was his budget last January. I think it was January 08, where, again, he talked about stripping funding for state parks and really focusing in on services that he knew would get a visceral reaction from people to try to provoke them into rising up and demanding, I don't know, revenue increases. I mean, maybe this is a cynical take on it.
Well, but I think a lot of people are talking about what you're talking about and trying to decide, is it an opening gambit? Is it an opening offer? Or is it a line in the sand?
This is not a line in the sand. I mean, look, the reality is a budget needs to be approved by 2/3 of the legislature. There's no way that this legislature is going to eliminate CalWORKs and Healthy Families. I mean, it's just not going to happen. Healthy Families provides health care to about 1 million children. 2/3 of the program is paid for by the federal government. So a lot of the cuts the governor's talking about making are the cuts that make the least sense financially. I mean, you lose the most leveraged money.
It's the penny-wise, pound-foolish kind of philosophy.
CalWORKs the same way. The way the CalWORKs system is set up, you really only save about 20 cents on the dollar that you cut. So you know, I mean, again, going back over the governor's track record, I understand the budget problem is serious, and I think this is the governor's way of saying, hey, look, we need to talk seriously about real cuts. And, you know, we may not be talking about revenue increases now, but something tells me, I've got a sneaking suspicion that 3 to 4 weeks from now, we're going to be talking about some kind of 41-vote package that includes some kind of revenue increases.
Well, and certainly the longer we go, the pressure only gets greater. I mean, because the cash problems are real. I mean, you know, if there's anything, the budget problem is real, absolutely. But if there's anything that's going to bite us in the you know what, first off, it's going to be the cash problems. The notion that we could be somewhere in the $20 billion range short of cash, and that the state could run out of cash somewhere near the end of July. And so that is going to have to push the dynamic for some of this as much as anything, because some of the budget savings can help the cash problem. Not all of it, but some of them can.
Right. But what's really going to help the cash problem is the federal government. And we saw, the Assembly Speaker, Karen Bass, went on a private media tour. I think she called all of us this week, right?
Yes, you and I both talked to her.
And talked about her trip to D.C. She had a discussion with Barney Frank.
I talked to Barney Frank also.
Yeah, well, there you go.
But that's another story.
Yeah, that's another podcast.
No, actually, it might be this podcast. No, okay. But keep going.
Okay, but and the speaker said that her conversations with Barney Frank, who's the chair of the House Banking Committee, gave her a lot of confidence that the federal government would end up guaranteeing the short-term loans that the state needs to make to cover its cash flow. And we've talked about this before, how we're not talking about expenditures overall, but the money flows in unevenly. So the state's expenses are front-loaded, and I think the legislative analyst said we could be billions short in cash by July.
And so, what the state needs is it needs a guarantee that in the rare event it defaults on the loans.
Which it never has.
Which actually may not be as rare anymore in these times. But in the rare event that California defaulted, that the feds would step in and cover the debt because the banks are jittery. They don't have as much money and as much credit and yada, 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 yada.
Right.
I talked to the speaker as well that morning that she was talking to people. I also talked to Barney Frank, the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee.
And what did he say?
Which was kind of this is an aside. It was a very odd thing because first he called me and I missed the call. And I had a voicemail on my desk phone that said, well, your answering message was too long. I can't believe I waited this long. This is Barney Frank. Now, I admit the message is a little long.
Can that be our theme song for the podcast?
Maybe I should get the audio of that, of Barney Frank telling me my it's too long.
Did you save the voicemail?
I did not.
Oh, Myers, well, you're killing me.
Well, it was kind of imperceptible. He was on a cell phone, so it kind of kept crackling back.
He does have that lisp.
But I called him back, and again, we had a cell phone connection trying to understand it. But the long and short of it is Congress reconvenes on Tuesday. He's prepared to move the legislation. The legislation would not be for California specifically.
Right.
It would be for any state that found itself in this trouble.
Including Massachusetts, where Barney Frank is from. I mean, there are a number of states that have the same sort of short-term cash flow issues as California, including Massachusetts. I think Arizona is another one, Florida. But anyway.
But one of the interesting things that he said, is that he was quick to point out, because, some of the early reports kind of made it seem like we were looking for bailout. And bailout is a loaded term. And bailout, I would argue, means that you need cash immediately. And as the one part of the call that I did hear crystal clear was Congressman Frank saying, there's no revenue for California out of this. There's no money for it. And this is all about, loan guarantees.
Guarantee.
And I think that's an important message, too, for lawmakers here, is that if you think there is going to be some way to get some money out of Washington, that's a whole different conversation and a lot harder than getting a loan or a cosigner
right.
as you called it.
Right. I think that there still is hope in some circles. But the speaker was emphatic this week that California is not asking for money from the federal government. They just want the federal government to co-sign the way that the commercial banks do in normal budget years. This is the kind of borrowing that goes on every year, but the banks are not in a position to guarantee these loans now because they're all owned by the government anyway, right? Or they've gone belly up, or are in distress. So that will alleviate some of the short-term problem, and I'm not sure as somebody whose summer vacation depends upon a quick resolution to this crisis, I'm not sure if that alleviation of the short-term problem is a good or bad thing. We'll leave that open to discussion.
You should not have made summer plans.
I did not. You know how that goes.
I won't be here next week, which we'll say at the end of the podcast, which is why there won't be one. So I'm not worried about a deal next week.
Maybe I'll have my own podcast.
Maybe
you ever think of that?
Maybe. Hey, you take
a spinoff. I'll be like Maud to your Archie Bunker.
Ah, I see.
It's a little B. Arthur
tribute.
Wasn't
there a spinoff of Maud, too?
I don't know.
Golden Girls. No. It was just same actress.
B. Arthur.
Anyway,
but,
that's not, yeah, okay.
But the late B. Arthur.
The late B. Arthur. A moment of silence there. It's going to be interesting. I mean, this whole push for a fast deal. I mean, the speaker talked about that again. Everybody continues to say that. But not only does that normally seem impossible here, it seems especially impossible when there's $5.6 billion of cuts that really the legislature only saw at midweek. They haven't even seen the full proposal, I think, of that. They haven't seen the $3 billion that the governor is putting out on Friday. I mean, you know, now we know something about some pay cuts there and stuff. And then they've still got to finish vetting that, and then they've got to figure out what other options are on the table, like you said. I mean, right. You're not going to – I don't believe either that this legislature is going to completely dismantle CalWORKs or Healthy Families. And so, I mean, the question really becomes how fast can you do all this? And also, what is the real deadline? I mean – We haven't enacted budget.
How long have you been doing this?
I know,
John?
I know. But I'm saying this for the average podcast listener.
How long have they been doing this?
Right, a casual observer of California politics. But we haven't enacted budget. We don't have a constitutional deadline this summer like we normally do. We have a financial crisis deadline, and I don't know that anybody knows for sure when that date is and what you have to do by when, short of you have to do something.
And I think right after the election, you know, I spoke to some Republican lawmakers, including Senator Jeff Denham, who's running for lieutenant governor, and he alluded to that fact that there was no need to do everything all at once, that there you could see a couple of different solutions sort of trickle out here over the next few months. I'm not sure the Democrats want to do that. But, you know, one of the interesting rhetorical things that's going on now is as the governor gets further out there on holding the line on a budget with no gimmicks, as he right. likes to say.
And said again on Thursday, right?
You're starting to see other groups mobilize to try to prevent borrowing. This is kind of a new line coming from the Republicans that not only is it no new taxes, but it's no new borrowing. And you know, we saw this week, we saw local governments begin to rally. You know, Mayor Villaraigosa was up talking to the governor, and a new website was launched to try to prevent the state from taking the $2 billion that they are constitutionally allowed to take once every 10 years under Proposition 1A, but to take $2 billion from local governments, to borrow that money from local governments that they would have to pay back over the next 3 years. So, I think this is sort of the next line of defense, and it's going to make things that much more complicated.
And yet there always will be, like water through cracks and money in politics, there's going to be some desire to do some kind of borrowing, some kind of gimmickry.
Of course.
Whether this really qualifies as a gimmick or not, I don't know. I have to be fair because I haven't seen the proposal. But in her media tour that we talked about, the speaker said that she had been presented at least with one idea about a reworking of redevelopment agencies in the state,
right.
and where there would be some way to get money for state government out of the way redevelopment agencies around the state are funded. Now, I don't want to call it a gimmick, but some people will call that a borrowing way around the real issue of taxes and cuts.
Right.
And again, I'm not surprised, not only because of the legislature we have, but the severity of the problem.
I do think, and you know, you could let us all know, John, what you think of this. I mean, I do think one thing from the May 19th election is that, you know, the governor took one message away, at least that he's talking about publicly. The message he took away from the May 19th election was the voters want cuts. They don't want tax increases. They don't want borrowing. They want these deep cuts. The Democrats, I don't think, have taken quite that message. But I do sense, even among Democrats, a realization that there are going to have to be deep cuts this time around. And I think it feels a little different than last year, or it wasn't even last year. It was a few months ago, right, where
yeah.
we went through all this. It feels a little bit different to me. I mean, I don't know if it does to you, but I think that, you know, whether it's going to be exclusively cuts, I doubt it. But I think there will be some real deep cuts in this budget.
I think it does feel different because so many more programs are on the chopping block. And on the chopping block, as you said, with everybody acknowledging everything's going to have to be cut back in some way.
Right.
And you do see interest groups mobilizing in a way, but you got to wonder how much – I've never thought I'd see anything that actually made interest groups have less power, but maybe the size of the problem and the seriousness of the problem might actually diminish some of the interest group power to say not us versus yeah. a, you know, us, okay, but only this.
Well, and I think if you say not us, it's incumbent upon you to say, okay, well, then what? And
yeah.
we saw the one public employee union today, one of the groups that was opposed to Proposition 1A, came out today with a new plan for $40 billion in new revenues annually.
Who would that be?
That was AFSCME, the American Federation of State, Municipal, and County Employees.
Good.
Public Employees Union.
There you go.
I tried Public Employee Union. You wouldn't let that go.
No, just acronyms. We got to get all the acronyms out.
Couldn't let it go.
No, not today.
So I think if you take the governor's proposal on the one hand and the AFSCME proposal on the other, you can still sort of see a way in which the battle lines are being drawn for this budget fight to come. I mean, the Legislative Conference Committee, the bipartisan legislative committee that is going to produce a budget product, the chair of that committee, Noreen Evans, the assemblywoman from Novato, made it perfectly clear that CalWORKs elimination was not going to be part of a budget that passed that committee. So
she made what I would consider, even for my jaded self, a pretty impassioned speech at the beginning of the conference committee hearing on Tuesday that said, "I will essentially, I will close half the prisons before I do some of this. I will support oil drilling before I do some of this to the social safety net." And therein gets to what I think you've been talking about it feeling different this time, and right, that some of the – I'm not saying either one of those things are going to happen, but some of the sacred cows are being viewed in a much different light, which is noteworthy into itself. And then, you know, something that came out in that first budget conference committee that was briefly mentioned, and I spent an entire day in the middle of the week trying to track down, was a massive overrun of spending in the federal prison receiver program, right, $500 million. That was announced in the current fiscal year. It was for the services that that prisoners are taken to hospitals and medical needs outside of prison walls. It was contract medical services.
Right.
They were 136% over budget in that program. And that came to light basically on the same time that all these people are basically crying and pleading in front of legislators to not cut other social services programs. It seemed to make an impact even on a couple of Republicans I talked to who said, you know, if I got to pick, I'm going to pick with these people. I think Bob Dutton said this to me, Senator Dutton from Rancho Cucamonga. I'm going to pick these people if I got to do anything other over the prisoners who,
right,
I think are getting health care that we could debate whether
Right.
So,
well, although in a lot of those costs, first of all, it's not like the state has a lot of choice. I mean, they're under a federal receivership here.
Of course.
But there's money allocated to build new facilities to treat prisoners. The AB 900 that passed a couple of years ago, there are revenue bonds that are able to be sold, and there's money to build these facilities. And we've heard for weeks that they were close on a deal, possibly. You know, a lot of the costs on the prison overruns were transportation costs, because you have a lot of prisons which are in rural areas, and you have high needs prisoners who have healthcare needs having to go to big hospitals in urban areas, and the cost of transporting those prisoners is extremely high. So these are some of the issues that that the state is hoping to resolve. It's one of those deals. It's like water. You know, every couple of weeks you hear, oh, they're close on this, and then it seems to fall apart. So, you know, whether that can be part of a larger budget solution, I think we'll see.
But. Yeah. A lot of moving parts at once. And, you know, I thought just one other thing that I think is worth mentioning here, and if you've got other things too, but this is part of the atmospherics of this problem. And maybe that's being too casual about it, but that is, what is the size of the deficit? What are we calling the size of this deficit? And the reason I bring that up is because this has happened before, and this is something that I think is, maybe I'm being a little too introspective as a reporter, but the administration started off with a $21.3 billion number. Just in the last several days, they've tacked on $3 billion to that, because they say that reflects the legislative analyst Mac Taylor's belief that revenues are $3 billion short of what the governor thought they were. So now they're calling it $24.3 billion. However, that includes a $2 billion reserve.
Right.
So by my count, I don't think you can call it anything but a $22 billion deficit, or 22.3.
Right.
And yet, you know, and so it's a small thing, but it's part of that way that the public starts to understand what this is and what
right.
we're doing and how bad the problem is. And everybody wants a reserve, but a reserve is not a deficit.
Right, right. And that's what I mean about intentionally inflating the number a little bit. I mean, and then there's the $5.5 billion in additional cuts that we saw, that, you know, with no borrowing. Well, you know, if if that borrowing is part of it, then are you talking about really a $17 billion problem? I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of political weight, and those numbers are loaded politically. And the administration understands that, and I think they're going to try to play the highest number. Again, not saying that the problem is not severe, but when that sort of overselling happens from the administration, I think it causes some of us who have some familiarity with some of these numbers to be at least somewhat skeptical.
Yeah. And yet, and again, I'm not doing media criticism podcast, and yet you continue to see those numbers in a lot of news organizations.
Absolutely.
without any kind of discussion like you and I, learned journalists, are having.
Right. Well, and you know, I wrote about this week in Capital Weekly, looking at some of the things that are sort of taken as conventional wisdom in the budget discussion. You know, one of the things you hear, we've had rapid growth in education spending. And, well, over the last few years, there's been big increases in education spending and in healthcare spending. And one of the drivers we hear for the big boost in healthcare spending is Medi-Cal caseload, that more and more people are using Medi-Cal. Well, guess what? Over the last 5 years, the number of Medi-Cal recipients has stayed the same at about 6.8 million. So it's not caseload. It might be something else. It might be the cost of healthcare or an aging Medicaid or Medi-Cal population. But some of these things that people repeat as if they're doctrine, as if they're gospel truth, just simply aren't true.
Yeah. And maybe this is the year we finally take a look at some of that and get beyond the—
And who would look at that?
Yeah, right.
Who's left? Who is left?
You and me.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. It's all upon us. Well, there'll be more pain and suffering, unfortunately, to report next week.
Sell it.
Yeah. It's the Pain and Suffering podcast, if you just tuned in, folks. Anyway, that'll do it for this week. Programming note. Sorry, programming note. So I'll be gone next week. So we probably won't do a podcast
next week.
Cue
the Hawaiian Islands. Hawaii music.
South Carolina, not quite Hawaii. Don't make your jokes.
I thought you were from North Carolina.
I am, but this is a family wedding event that I'm attending.
You've been kicked out of the state?
Yeah, pretty much. That was it. They told us to get packing. So we'll be back with a podcast the week after that. So fear not. You can keep reading everything at Capital Weekly to know what's going on.
Capitalweekly.net.
Yes, with an O.
Yes. Not yes. Thank you, sir.
For this podcast, for Anthony York with an O from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers with an O from KQED. We'll see you next time.